Have you ever found yourself just swimming in medical information? Feeling completely, overwhelmed?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Maybe trying to understand something for a loved one, or even just out of curiosity, and you just get lost in all the jargon, the details.
That's a lot.
It really is. Well, if that sounds familiar to you listening, you're definitely in the right place today. We're taking a deep dive into a topic that's incredibly important, but often really misunderstood, delirium.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission today is to try and cut through some of that complexity. We've gone through this huge systematic review that looks at the very tangled relationship between medications and delirium.
Yeah, a really intricate connection.
Exactly. Both when dementia is present and when it's not. So we're here to pull out the most important bits, give you a kind of shortcut to being really well informed, and maybe even a little surprised by what we find.
And it's such a critical topic because, delirium isn't just simple confusion. It's actually a serious neuropsychiatric illness.
Affecting the brain and mental state.
Right. Exactly. And it comes on really abruptly, this disorientation. The consequences are, well, they're pretty stark.
How stark are we talking?
We're talking double the risk of death, a 2.4 times higher chance of needing long-term institutional care.
Wow.
And get this. A staggering 12.5 times higher risk of actually developing dementia later on.
12 and a half times. That's huge.
It is. And the cost to healthcare systems, we're talking billions every year just in the U.S.
Okay, those numbers are definitely sobering. But let's unpack it a bit.
Yeah.
When we talk about delirium, what is it exactly beyond those alarming stats? And why is that connection to medication so vital for everyone involved, patients, caregivers, the whole system?
Well, delirium is especially common among older folks who are hospitalized. And the crucial thing to grasp is how medication fits in. It can be a predisposing factor.
Sort of setting the stage, no. Making someone more vulnerable.
Precisely. Or it can be a precipitating factor, the thing that actually triggers an episode. Think of it like someone's already on thin ice and the medication is the thing that pushes them over.
And I imagine it gets even more complicated when someone already has dementia, right? You mentioned that earlier, this delirium superimposed on dementia, or DSD.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes diagnosis incredibly difficult.
Because it looks just like the dementia suddenly got worse.
Exactly. It often gets mistaken for just a rapid worsening of the underlying dementia. And that, understandably, leads to longer hospital stays, much higher costs, maybe up to 52% higher when dementia's in the picture.
That's a huge difference. And the distress for families must be immense.
Absolutely. Misdiagnosis means potential delays in the right treatment. And what's really eye-opening from this big review is that many international guidelines, they often lack really detailed specific info on medication risk for delirium.
So there's a gap in the guidance.
A major gap. This systematic review was basically this huge effort to pull together all the evidence and try to fill that exact gap.
Okay, so they really went hunting for answers.
Yeah.
And it was a massive undertaking, you said, over 3,800 papers.
Yeah, starting with that many, then carefully filtering down to the 106 most relevant publications. A huge amount of work.
Definitely. So what did they find about how these medications actually contribute? It's clearly not just a simple A causes B situation.
No, not at all. It's much more complex. The review pointed to three main ways drugs seem to be involved. First, there are neurotransmitter imbalances.
Okay, the brain's chemical messengers.
Exactly. Things like acetylcholine, dopamine, norepinephrine, GABA. When medications mess with the balance of these chemicals, maybe blocking them or changing how much is available, it can directly cause that confusion and disorientation of delirium, like an orchestra hitting a wrong note.
Got it. What's the second way?
Second is pharmacokinetic changes. Sounds technical, but it just means how the body handles the drug.
How it processes it.
Right. As we age, or when we're sick, that processing can change a lot. Maybe less stomach acid affects absorption, or more body fat changes where the drug goes. And critically, if the liver or kidneys aren't working top-notch, they can't clear the drug out as fast.
So the same dose could suddenly be much stronger.
Exactly. It hangs around longer, potentially becoming toxic. It's like pouring the same drink into a smaller glass. It overflows.
That makes sense. And the third mechanism.
The third involves broader physiological processes, things like neuroinflammation, that's inflammation in the brain, or oxidative stress, which is like cellular damage, even disrupting sleep patterns. Medications can contribute to these, creating a brain environment that's just more vulnerable to delirium.
So multiple pathways converging. Okay, let's get specific then. Which medications kept popping up in this review? You said 158 individual drugs across 20 classes.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Let's start with a big one. Opioid analgesics. Painkillers.
Yeah, opioids are definitely a significant risk factor. The review showed that cumulative daily doses matter, like going over 54 milligrams a day of general opioids.
What?
Or with methadone, doses over 80 milligrams start increasing risk, and it actually doubles over 150 and then doubles again over 200 milligrams a day.
Wow, that's a steep curve.
It is. And how the opioid works matters too, like transdermal fentanyl, the patch. It has a really long half-life, 6 or 7 hours.
Meaning it stays in the system longer.
Right, which makes managing side effects like confusion much harder to do quickly. Compare that to, say, oxycodone. Shorter half-life, maybe 3 hours. That means a more predictable effect and potentially a lower risk profile for delirium. It's not just if an opioid, but which one and how long it acts.
That's a really important distinction. Now, what about antipsychotics? They often come up when talking about managing delirium, but it sounds like there's some controversy.
There really is. Some older studies did link one specific antipsychotic, haloperidol, to maybe making delirium last longer, but a more recent big meta-analysis couldn't actually confirm that link.
So the evidence isn't clear-cut?
Not entirely. What we do know is many antipsychotics carry a moderate risk of something called QTC prolongation, especially if given through an IV.
Okay, hang on. QTC prolongation, the score. What is that simply, and why is it a heart concern here?
Good question. It basically means a part of the heart's electrical cycle takes a bit longer than normal. In some people, this can increase the risk of dangerous irregular heartbeats. So it's something doctors watch closely with certain drugs, like IV haloperidol.
Okay, that's important context.
But here's the kicker. Even though antipsychotics are often used off-label to calm agitation and delirium, this review found their use was not actually linked to changes in how long the delirium lasted or how severe it was.
Really? So they might calm agitation, but not fix the underlying delirium duration or severity?
That's what this review suggests, which definitely raises questions about how routinely they should be used, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Okay, let's move to anxiolytics and hypnotics drugs for anxiety or sleep.
Right. Benzodiazepines, especially the ones that act for a long time, are consistently linked to higher delirium risk.
Like Valium or Xanax type drugs, or longer acting ones?
More the longer acting ones, generally. The review mentions thresholds like cumulative daily doses over 2 milligrams or 5 milligrams. And it's not just benzos, those Z substances for sleep, like Zolpidem or Zopiclone.
Ambien, Lunesta.
Exactly. They've also been linked to symptoms like visual hallucinations, agitation, sometimes even after just one dose. And here's a critical point. Suddenly stopping benzodiazepines, the withdrawal, can also trigger delirium.
Oh, so tapering off carefully is key.
Very key.
What about antidepressants?
Both older types, the tricyclics or TCAs, and the newer SSRIs, are associated with increased risk. Paroxetine and amitriptyline were mentioned frequently.
Okay. And corticosteroids, steroids like prednisone.
Yep. All steroids seem to carry some risk. Cumulative daily doses over 15 milligrams were linked to increased delirium risk within about a month of being hospitalized.
Good to know. What about heart medications? Cardiovascular drugs?
The ones that can get into the brain, affect the central nervous system, seem to carry the highest risk. Think digoxin, clonidine, reserpine. And interestingly, even common blood pressure meds like ACE inhibitors have had reports of causing visual hallucinations, especially in older patients who might already have some cognitive issues.
Wow, an ACE inhibitor causing hallucinations. That's unexpected.
It is surprising, yeah.
And what about cholinesterase inhibitors? These are often used for dementia itself.
Right, and here's where it gets paradoxical. While they're used to help dementia symptoms, they can actually cause delirium, especially if someone already has underlying issues with that acetylcholine system in the brain.
The very system they're supposed to help.
Exactly. Agitation and hallucinations are common symptoms if they trigger delirium. And the review even found this weird contradiction. One paper suggested using rivastigmine, which is a cholinesterase inhibitor, as a potential treatment for a specific type of delirium caused by blocking acetylcholine.
Wait, so a drug in the class can cause delirium, but also maybe treat a type of delirium? That is confusing. Can you quickly explain that term you used, anticholinergic potential?
Sure. Anticholinergic potential just refers to a drug's ability to block that key brain chemical, acetylcholine. Lots of different types of drugs have this effect, not just dementia meds. And blocking too much acetylcholine is a very common way medications can lead to confusion, memory problems, and delirium.
Okay, that helps clarify. So it's a common mechanism. Lastly, antibiotics.
The reports on antibiotics are kind of all over the place. No single antibiotic seems to have a predictable effect on cognition every time. But they can sometimes cause episodes that look like delirium. Quinolones and macrolides were mentioned most often, so not a guaranteed risk, but something to keep in mind.
It's definitely a complex picture with individual drugs, but you often hear it's not just one medication, but the combination, the drug cocktail that causes problems. Did the review look at these dangerous liaisons?
Absolutely. This is where polypharmacy using multiple drugs becomes so critical. The review did flag several specific high-risk combinations. Uh-oh. Like what? For instance, quetiapine combined with furosemide, fentanyl exposure alone or with other drugs kept showing up. Another combo was haloperidol plus Docusit plus paracetamol.
So an antipsychotic, a stool softener, and Tylenol. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. And another one, furosemide, omeprazole, and lorazepam together. A diuretic, a heartburn med, and an anti-anxiety drug.
Okay, those are specific. Were there broader patterns too?
Yes. Common mixes like antidepressants plus blood pressure meds, or psycholeptics, those calming drugs plus blood pressure meds, even opioids plus blood pressure meds seemed problematic.
So combining things that affect the brain with things that affect blood pressure seems risky.
It appears so. Also, some specific pain med combos like oxycodone plus hydromorphone and certain Parkinson's drug combinations like apomorphine plus carbidopa or rhodiotine plus carbidopa were linked specifically to delusions. It really highlights that clinicians have to look at the entire medication list, not just one drug in isolation. The cumulative effect is key.
That really paints a picture of the juggling act doctors and pharmacists face. So, given all these risks, how is delirium usually treated? And are there alternatives, especially if meds are part of the problem?
Well, as we discussed, antipsychotics are often used for agitation, but their actual impact on the delirium itself is controversial. Meta-analyses haven't shown they shorten it or make it less severe.
Right.
In fact, established guidelines like the Beers criteria or the S.TP fall tool for older adults often recommend stopping antipsychotics unless the patient is posing a significant risk to themselves or others.
So the default might lean towards less medication in some cases.
Ideally, yes, or at least very careful consideration. On the alternative front, there are some promising things. Dexmedetomidine, a type of sedative, shows potential in certain hospital settings, like ICUs. And newer sleep meds, the orexin antagonists Sevorexant, Lemborexant, are being looked at for preventing delirium, which is really exciting.
Prevention is always better.
Absolutely. Broader strategies focus on stopping unnecessary medications, always considering that anticholinergic burden we talked about, and maybe choosing newer drugs in a class if they have a potentially safer profile. And for that specific anticholinergic toxicity, there's a drug called physostigmin that can sometimes be used as an antidote.
Okay, so there are options. Now let's revisit that really challenging area. DSD, delirium superimposed on dementia. Distinguishing that must be incredibly tough. What did the review find specifically about meds causing delirium in people who already have dementia?
It's a huge issue. The review suggests medication is involved in somewhere between 12% and 39% of delirium cases in people with dementia. That's a significant chunk.
Definitely. Are the mechanisms the same?
Often, yes. It circles back to those key neurotransmitters, like acetylcholine and opioid peptides, which might already be functioning differently in someone with dementia, making them more susceptible.
And the drug classes involved? Any surprises there?
Mostly similar classes, but with some specific nuances for dementia patients. Cholinesterase inhibitors, the dementia meds themselves, were flagged again like memantine or donepezil over 5 milligrams a day, or visual hallucinations with the ribostigmine patch.
Patch again?
Yeah. Certain antibiotics popped up too, nitrofurantoin, gadafloxacin, clarithromycin, macrolides. Analgesics were mentioned, with oxycodone maybe being a slightly better choice because it's more predictable. And certain cardiac drugs and some psychiatric meds also got cited. The bottom line is a brain affected by dementia is just more vulnerable, so medication choices need even more careful thought.
This has been such a deep dive into the complexity of making connections I hadn't considered. But you mentioned the review brings up something potentially unifying, going beyond just the brain, something about the gut.
Yes, exactly. This is really fascinating. The review highlights the gut-brain axis and the vagus nerve.
Okay, I've heard of the gut-brain connection.
Right. The vagus nerve is like this major communication highway between the gut and the brain running both ways. And disruptions in this pathway are already being linked to cognitive issues and dementia.
So how do medications fit into that?
Well, here's the kicker. Many common medications, antibiotics, corticosteroids, even those proton pump inhibitors for heartburn, can significantly change our gut microbiome, the balance of bacteria in our gut.
Really? they affect our gut bacteria that much?
Significantly. And this isn't just a small local effect. It impacts our overall health, including how we process drugs, their efficacy, their toxicity. There's even early research suggesting that therapies targeting the microbiome, maybe through diet or specific probiotics, could potentially reduce inflammation system-wide and positively affect cognition.
Wow.
It opens up possibilities for new ways to prevent things like cognitive problems after surgery, for example.
So this gut-brain link, if meds change the gut and the gut talks to the brain, could this be a major sort of hidden pathway for how some medications contribute to delirium, something we're only just starting to appreciate?
That's exactly the implication. It suggests a whole other layer of complexity and potentially a whole new avenue for prevention and treatment that we haven't fully explored. Imagine tailoring gut health interventions to potentially reduce delirium risk.
That is genuinely mind-blowing. It really changes how you think about medication effects.
Okay, so bringing this all together, after this incredibly deep dive, what's the main takeaway for us?
I think the biggest takeaway is just how much we still don't fully understand about delirium's underlying mechanisms, especially concerning specific medication risks. But this review is a massive step forward. It identified way more implicated drugs and drug classes than you'll find in most standard guidelines right now.
So it's providing much needed detail. Exactly. And it really strengthens the argument for trying to categorize delirium better based on its cause. If we can create these distinct subgroups, research becomes more targeted and prescribing advice can become much clearer and safer.
Makes sense. Treat the cause, not just the symptom.
Precisely. And it reinforces that there's likely no single magic bullet drug to treat delirium. Instead, these comprehensive multi-component approaches like programs in hospitals focused on preventing delirium in older adults through various non-drug strategies have shown real success, reducing delirium odds by over 50% in some studies.
So a team approach works best.
Definitely. Looking ahead, AI might play a role in sifting through patient data to spot medication risks or even suggest treatment strategies. And we absolutely need more research into that gut-brain axis connection and the microbiome's role.
And throughout all this complexity, it sounds like the role of the clinical pharmacist is absolutely vital.
Couldn't agree more. As the medication experts, their input in any delirium care plan, especially with these complex multi-component approaches, is essential for navigating this medication maze safely.
So reflecting on everything we've covered, the sheer impact of delirium, the specific drugs, the combinations, the treatment challenges, and this fascinating gut connection, what really stands out to you?
For me, it's the reminder that the path from medication to delirium is incredibly complex, often subtle, and involves so much more than just the drug itself. But recognizing these diverse risk factors, many hidden in plain sight within a patient's medication list or even their gut health, is the absolutely critical first step towards preventing it and improving care.
It really makes you think. If our understanding of something like delirium is still evolving so much, especially these subtle interactions right down to our gut microbiome,
yeah.
It just makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other hidden factors might be influencing our health, just waiting for the next deep dive? Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and stay curious.